The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Long time, and I was just apologizing to him before we started the show. Mark Ingram, the athletic director for your UAB Blazers, joined us here on Tony Curry Live and the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. Mark, man, how have you been? It was so good to see you this past week. I didn't get a chance to shake your hand, but I saw you walk along the sidelines as UAB knocked off MTSU 41-14. But how you been, brother? What's been going on?
Man, I've been great, Tony. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you having me on.
You got it, man. Anytime. Of course, so UAB's got another home game this weekend against Charlotte. So Protective Stadium, about a year and a half into it. Everything you dreamt it would be? I mean, I just thoroughly love that. I went down there for the World Games, saw the Garth Brooks concert, and obviously you have a great partnership with the city of Birmingham, but I'll always see it as UAB's home football field. But what's your thoughts on the stadium so far in its infancy? It's young.
Yeah, the stadium is tremendous, and we get a lot of positive feedback about it. Anybody that visits really feels that way. It shows well. It's easy access. Parking is easy. You know, it's easy to get to from the interstate. So you can get there from multiple arteries around town, and the more people go, the more comfortable they'll be with that. And so we've had nothing but positive things. You know, we continue to try and refine some of the operational details. You know, how can we make concessions lines faster and, you know, that sort of thing, which I think hopefully everybody expects a little bit of that. And we certainly did. But you know, as we refine those operational, you know, details, again, that most people don't really worry about, fans don't really think about, I'm really excited for the future, but the facility itself is tremendous.
What about fan participation? I will tell you this. You're obviously going to get a different type of fan at that stadium than you would have at the old Gray Lady, and I certainly understand that. The thing I've noticed is it looks like you're skewing younger, which I think is fantastic. And it just seems like the fan base is into it a little bit more. If there's anything that being critical by any stretch, but I think a lot of people just like to walk around. So at any given time, you look at the seats and it doesn't always look full, but I think a lot of people really enjoy. I love the concourse area. I like to stretch my legs. We were just talking about our legs. You just had surgery. I've got arthritis. I like to walk around the stadium and watch the game while I walk. Do you find that to be true for a lot of your fans?
I do, and it's funny that you say that. What we've learned through a lot of research, meaning talking to other schools and asking, you know, what have they found successful when they look at different club seating areas or whatever, we sort of modeled Protective after Regions Field in that regard. You know, when you go to a Barons game, you can stand in the concourse, you can lean up against the railing, you can enjoy your drink, your hot dog, and talk to a friend while the game is going on. And we see that at Protective, that same concept as well. And what we've seen is it's sort of the evolution of sports fans. You know, 20 years ago or so, it was let's get to the game and get to our seats as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because you couldn't see what was going on inside if you didn't.
Yeah.
Now I can kind of wander around. I can socialize with my friends in a group, and I'm there and I'm a part of it. And that's, I think, becoming more and more popular nationwide and just how people watch games. And so I'm glad that we designed the stadium that with that in mind and sort of addressing that new way of watching sports on the front end and not have to retrofit it later. But you're exactly right. We all internally do the same thing. You said you're looking around. There's not that many people in their seats. You're not wrong about that, but they're there. Yeah. And if you walk around the concourse, that's where you see them. They're all doing the same thing. Everybody's out in the concourse, seeing their friends. You go into the club seating area and you go, wow, where are all the seat holders? They're inside having a good time, you know, watching some of the game on TV in between, you know, getting a snack and something to drink, and they're in and out and back and forth, but not necessarily confined to their actual chair. And which is fine. We just want people to have a good time, right? We're just trying to provide a great entertainment opportunity in an affordable way at a great place.
No, and I love the fact that I can actually listen to the game while I'm taking a whiz too. I can hear the radio. I can hear the radio broadcast while I'm in the bathroom. It's pretty nice because as I get older, you know, when you got to go, you got to go. Mark Ingram, athletic director, of course, of the UAB Blazers, joins us here on Tony Curry Live, the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. We'll also run this on TKR. Thanks to the tens of thousands of folks who've already downloaded the Tony Curry Radio app. We do classic rock and a bunch of different shows. We hope you appreciate it. So I always feel comfortable enough with you that I can ask you any question. Coach Bryant Vinson, I got a chance to talk to him a couple weeks ago on another radio show, and I just thought it was really interesting that he came in his sixth year with the UAB football family as an interim coach, and was wondering what the thought process was bringing him in, taking over for Bill Clark, who obviously retired, and on an interim basis and not as a full head coach, and what he needs to do this season in order to keep that gig. Or are you, have you been up front with him and say, listen, if it doesn't go well, chances are you're not going to be head coach. How's that work?
Yeah, so Coach Clark announced his retirement June 24th, and Coach Vincent was our offensive coordinator. So we didn't, you know, bring him in per se. He was already, you know, on our staff and felt like he was very capable of managing things. You know, it puts him in a tough position to try to, make the team be his team, right? And the staff be his staff when he wasn't the one who hired them. That's just a tough position to be in. However, it's the most talented roster that we've probably ever had. And so that's, you know, obviously good news. And, you know, you're not going to win with bad players. You got to have good players. And we've got a lot of good players. So that's good. Yeah, I've been very open with him from the very beginning, very transparent about the process. You know, this job here at UAB is incredibly good. And it's much better than the job that Coach Clark accepted back in 2014. Or I guess December of 13, whatever it was, or January 14. You know, we've built this fantastic practice facility that is better than most places. We built this football stadium that you and I were just talking about that might be the nicest college stadium in the country, period. It really is that good. So between that and the quality of our university and this great city that we live in, there's so much opportunity in our city, being, you know, the size of Birmingham, being 1.2 million greater Birmingham, there's just a lot of opportunity here. And so then now layer in how important college football is to people that live here. So you're going to live in a place that really values your sport and a ton of talent in the state of Alabama, and then the states that surround Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana, Tennessee. You know, you've got a lot of great talent. You can certainly recruit nationally, but you don't have to. And we do have, you know, a lot of talent from out of the state, but the bulk of our talent is from right here in the state of Alabama. And so the opportunity is tremendous for whoever has the job. But I told him from the beginning, we have a great job. And it's my job to get the very best coach that we can to lead our program, which could be you.
Yeah.
You know, is what I said to him. And I told the staff that, and I told our team that the very first day back in, I guess it would have been June 27th when I told them that. And I said, so, you know, it doesn't have to be weird.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, look, you know, I said to the staff, I asked them all, I said, raise your hand if you've got an agent, you know, and a few of them did. And I said, listen, you're going to talk to your agent. Your agent's going to tell you that, you know, he or she heard that I was talking to whoever about the job. I said, go ahead and assume that's true.
Yeah.
I said, don't make it weird. It's my job to do that. It's my job to talk to everybody and as many people as I can. And ultimately, if Coach Vincent becomes our permanent head coach, it will be as a result of determining after all those conversations that he's the best for it. And so that's what you want. And really that's what he wants.
Yeah.
So it's been a very open discussion with him about that the whole step of the way.
And the only two losses so far this year, one score losses. So that certainly bodes well for him sitting at 3-2 right now. So hopefully they'll get a win against Charlotte this weekend and he'll end up retaining that job. I know a lot of people know that he's put his blood, sweat, and tears into this program. It'd be great to see him but become head coach. We'll see what happens. Mark Ingram, he's the athletic director for the UAB Blazers, spending a few minutes here on Tony Curry Live and the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. You can hear our podcast on every major indice out there. Just go to wherever you find your podcast and look for Tony Curry Live. Speaking of agents, I think the last time we had you on the show, we talked about the NIL deal. I know that you were staunchly against it. I know a lot of people believe that only the richest or the best players would get NIL deals. Now, Texas Tech has this whole Matador Club where all 85 scholarship players are getting $25,000, which is redeemable year after year. The money is pouring in. I don't know where it's coming from. It's all over the place. We, of course, also have this very interesting NIL collective rule that the NCAA is trying to enforce. We've been in it a while now. The Wild Wild West is out there, and the NCAA, like it always has, is scrambling to try to fix things, and obviously they're not part of it. It's at a state level now. Is it what you thought it would be, and where do you think we're headed, and what do you think we need to do to make sure that it doesn't get out of control more so than it already is?
Yeah, well, it's exactly where I thought it would be, which is why I was so against it. You know, it's not that I have an issue. Just to clarify, I don't have any issue with what true name, image, and likeness by its definition is. What I knew and what everybody in college athletics knew was that it would immediately be twisted and turned into something else, which is, you mentioned the word collectives. Collectives are not businesses. It's a loophole. Mm-hmm. Collectives are an entity that says, if you're an athlete and I'm a fan, I can't give you money, but I can give it to the collective and then they can give you money. And yeah, now it's okay. And I just think that's ridiculous that we won't just admit that. I don't know why we won't just say we've decided that pay for play is acceptable, because that's what it is. And the politicians that decided to put their nose in it only did so because they want to be president of the United States. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yep.
They don't know anything about it. And if you get into a conversation with them, it takes 15 seconds to figure out they don't understand it at all and don't care to.
Yeah.
They simply saw an opportunity in a popular topic that would get their name out nationally and popularize themselves with potential voters one day and make their name one that people resonated with as somebody who, quote, fixed college athletics. Well, I would say it's anything but. It's turned the whole thing into what we all worked for 100 years against, which is, don't turn this into pay for play. Don't lose the amateurism piece of it, that element. And let's try to make it equitable nationally so that we can have healthy competition nationally. And that's good for the sport and good for the athletes. Again, true NIL, I'm all for. It's nearly impossible to regulate true NIL. True NIL being a local business wants to give some free food or a little bit of cash to a person for being on a billboard or being on a commercial. I'm all for that. Hey, I'm going to bring the team over here. They're going to sign autographs and they're going to do that for, you know, 2 hours. And we're going to advertise that, which is good for our business. And so we're going to pay them for their time, a wage that is, that you would consider to be, you know, an acceptable, reasonable number. I'm all fine with that. The problem is not that. The problem is the collectives, and right now the collectives are permissible. So we've all got to get into that space or else fall behind. So, you know, these schools that are paying a certain amount of cash to all their, you just said, whatever school it was, that they're all getting $25,000 apiece.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pay for play.
Yep.
You know how many people on that team are never going to touch the field?
Yeah, I know, right?
They're never going to touch the field. There's as many players that come to us. In fact, there's more players who come to us that never touch the field than there are players who come to us and become, you know, quote unquote stars.
And just to clarify, the NIL collective is kind of in that you can't pay a player to come to your school. You can pay him once he gets there, and if he gets there and he's doing something and he's marketable, then the NIL is fine. But you can't effectively pay a player, here, I'll give you $50,000 to come play at UAB. It doesn't work that way, correct? Well,
you're right. It's not supposed to work
that
way.
Yeah.
But that's what's happening.
That's what the NCAA is offering, trying to enforce, yeah.
Yeah, and you know what, though? If you go back in on a different topic and you talk about transfer rules, one of the things, the word tampering, it was referred to, if you're a coach at one school, you cannot actively recruit a player who's already at another school from one university to another. You cannot do that. But what people would do is they would see that, hey, you're the second string tailback. You're really good, but the first string tailback is excellent. You know, you're getting a couple carries a game, but you're not really playing that much. We really need a tailback. You would start for us. And so coaches would find a way to get that message to you through your high school coach, your AAU coach, your, you know, some friend of a friend of a friend, get to you through this third party to tell you that, to get you to transfer to a different school. And so that would lure you away. But it was impossible. You know, the NCAA would tell you that that's, you know, forbidden, and it's, you know, one of the worst things you could do. But it's impossible to prove.
Yeah.
Unless you've got a, you know, a written email, Tony, if you come here, you will start, you know, which nobody's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's impossible to prove. You say, well, you talked to his high school coach. Yeah, I talk to that high school coach all the time. That high school has prospects. I've got a relationship. We're just talking prospects. You can't prove what I was talking to that coach about.
Yeah.
And so now it's the same thing on paying or offering payment to players coming out of high school, or hey, if you'll transfer, leave your school and come to my school, we'll pay you this much. That's going to be incredibly difficult to prove. But if you ask our athletes, they're saying it happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, the cat is out of the bag, and now we're trying to stuff those fat legs back into the pantyhose, and it just doesn't work, or the toothpaste into the tube, whatever analogy you want to use. He is, of course, the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. Mark Ingram, and kind enough to join us every single week here to listen to us on the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. Download that TKR app and listen to the shows live, and listen to these podcasts, these interviews, anytime you want. I love having you on, not only because I consider you a dear friend of mine. I can talk to coaches all day long, and I've done it for years about X's and O's and offenses, defense, special teams and stuff, but I like to get behind the scenes. And there's two coaches right now that are on, it's as hot as it gets on the hot seats, and that'd be, of course, the Auburn Tigers' Brian Harsin, who's only 19 games into his tenure there at Auburn, and Brent Venables, which I cannot believe we're actually talking about this. He's six games into his long contract at Oklahoma. As an athletic director, and you're part of the hiring process when it comes to college coaches, your thoughts on the fact that they are on such hot seats so early? We used to always, when I first started sports radio 20, 25 years ago, you automatically had 3 years to prove yourself because you needed to get your own guys in. We'd even go as far as to say that if you won a championship, a conference championship or a bigger one in your first 2 years, you were using the players that were already in the cupboard. And we wanted to see what you could do in years 3, 4, and 5, and hopefully you made it that long. What's your thoughts on the temperament of hiring college football coaches right now and how quick we are to put them on the hot seat?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, but what it is, and this isn't about any one particular coach, it's just the situation. It's a couple of things. One, if you go back again, if you said it was, I don't know what you said, 10 years or 20 years ago, whatever, the transfer rules have changed in a way that allow you, like free agency, to change your roster immediately. And so between what the coaches are paid, which is a high salary, that means the expectations are high. Then you layer in the ability to go and recruit through the transfer portal and sort of change your roster overnight because they can play immediately. It used to be also they had to sit out a year, what was called a year in residency. They had to go and sit out a year. So even if they did transfer from school A to school B, they couldn't make an immediate impact. So you had to wait on that person. And then, of course, you can imagine, you know, 9 out of 10 times they seem to turn their ankle headed towards a popsicle stand and you'd never hear from them, you know?
Yeah.
So the ability to play immediately and transfer and recruit transfers has made that, along with the compensation. And then finally, the fact that you know, social media plays such a part in it. You can, the information is out there about how somebody is doing. Every thing that they do that's right and wrong is, you know, is all over the place. Everybody
knows. But don't fans take into account? I guess they don't. That if you're going to fire a guy that I consider Brian Harsin a splash hire, because I mean, obviously he had a lot of success out of Boise out in the Northeast, and he was obviously doing a great job out there, and you're bringing him in. Don't fans realize that if they're going to try to burn the place down before his second year, that other coaches are going to look at that and their agents are going to go, why do we want to be part of that? I mean, we don't know what we're even getting ourselves into. We can't turn this program around. You can't change a culture in a year. You can't.
Yeah. I would just tell you that in my experience, that while there might be one or two fans that realize that, the vast majority do not realize that, that talking bad about your own program publicly, it looks bad to any potential recruit. It looks bad to any potential coach that you might want to bring in. It makes coaches say and think that, you know, wow, those guys are crazy. I'm not sure I want to get into that. I mean, it is. And I've been a part of that at other places where I saw that in trying to recruit a coach. And, you know, the other thing, Tony, that makes this sort of hot seat discussion in the middle of the year, you know, why in the middle of the year? Well, it's because of the December signing period.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this at the national level, that we created the December signing period to benefit the high school recruit.
Yeah.
High school recruit in many cases is ready to be done with it. And I want to be, you know, stop bothering me. Because even if I committed to school number one, I got 20 other schools that are still calling me, trying to get me to go. And that, while that is true for some number of players, that's not true for everybody. Well, while we've done this nice thing for the high school recruit, it's a bad thing for all of the previous signing classes, which is the existing team at the place where the coach gets fired after, you know, two or four or five games or whatever it is. But not the completion of the year. You know, because I'm not getting that year back. If I'm on the team, my eligibility doesn't restore. I don't get, you know, a reset. Oh, they fired my coach in the middle of the year, so the NCAA gives me this year back. Mm-hmm. No, they don't.
Yep.
That year goes away. So it's really good for the high school recruit, but it's really bad for your existing team. But people are doing it because of the December signing period, and they know if they don't have a coach in place by, you know, let's just call it the first week of December, there's no time for, you know, you're trying to retain some number of players on the existing roster. And then, of course, sign or get signed all the people that were committed that you might want. You know, the new coach may come in. Fans will also say, oh, gosh, we're going to lose all our recruits. Well, we just fired the coach. Do we want those recruits?
No doubt.
Maybe that's part of the deal. You know, like, oh, no, all of our players are going to leave. Well, maybe that's okay. Maybe we, you know, but. But nonetheless, that early signing period is what's forced these mid-year firings, and it's really bad for the existing student athletes.
And I think, you know, sometimes we just want it to work. I think when Scott Frost went back to Nebraska, we just wanted it to work. I'm a Cincinnati Reds fan, so when Pete Rose came in as a player manager, it was like, how could this fail? And it did miserably. You look at the Brent Venables situation where he's been waiting for this Oklahoma gig, and now he's in, and of course he's getting blown out by 50, and you're like, what in the world? And I just want to tell people just to relax. And you know, I love analogies when it comes to relationships. You know that, Mark, right? You know that, right? So, I mean, if you're in a relationship where she's constantly telling you she's going to leave you, you end up walking on eggshells, and you never really find out who that individual really is. And that's what I kind of feel like the Auburn situation is right now. I think he's always looking over his shoulder. He's probably thinking about it. Now, the good thing about it is you got great agents, and he'll walk out of there with $15 million, as he probably should. But I just don't. And that's the other thing where fans just don't understand. You have to offer that type of money to bring coaches in, regardless of whether it works or not at this point. You just have to. And it's unfortunate that I really feel like if they just would have left him alone after year one, that he could be successful, and I think everyone would be happy. Hey, Mark, thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
Athletics is the only business that I know of where people publicly speak about somebody else's job like that,
yeah.
Right? Like you've never gone home and somebody come to you, your neighbor come to you and say, I think Steve, the plumber up the road, I think he should lose his job.
Yeah, I know, right?
Why should he lose his job? Well, you know, I just am not sure that he's getting it done at his place. Well, do you know anything about plumbing? Well, no, I don't really know anything about plumbing, but We have a lot of plumbing in our house, and therefore, I don't know that he's doing quite a good enough job. Well, based on what? Well, I just don't.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, and then talk about that guy losing his job. Like, so it is an uneasy thing, and it's a high pressure situation for every coach, no doubt.
That's a much better analogy than mine was. I got news for you. Hey, Mark, thank you so much. We're going to catch up with you every single week. So UAB fans, get after it. Of course, Charlotte coming up this Saturday, 2:30. We'll try to get back down there and see you. Congratulations so far on a great season. Next week, we'll get into some hoops. I know we're a couple weeks away from the UAB Blazers. They're supposed to be really good. Talk about some pressure, man. The UAB Blazers basketball program, a lot of people saying top 25, no doubt. Mark, so they already got you going to the Final Four, Mark. So we'll see if that –
ought to tip it off at least once before we do that.
Yeah,
Coach Kennedy's excited about the team that he's got and feels like they're better than the team we had last year. And, of course, last year we won the championship. So certainly exciting days ahead.
All right, sounds good. I'll catch you next week. Thank you, sir.
All right, Coach. See you, man.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.